Lottie's learning the guitar, as some of you may know, and one of the songs that she's learning at the moment comes from The Sound of Music, and not actually the song that she's learning, but one of the other songs from The Sound of Music appealed to me when I was preparing for today. I'm sure you all know the song Do Re Mi, and the picture of Maria and the children dancing around as they sang it. But the first line of it came to me. Let's start at the very beginning. A very good place to start. When you start to read, you begin with ABC. And that's what my talk is this morning. It's an ABC for mission. Now, if you were going to play a high-level competitive game of tennis and you wanted a bit of sound advice, you'd probably go and talk to Andy Murray, if you happen to know him. If you were going to be doing some figure skating, maybe you'd go and talk to Torvill and Dean. If you were cooking, you could approach Jamie Oliver. If you were going to do some running, maybe Mo Farah would be the person to talk to. But we're not doing any of these things. We are preparing for mission. And so, who better for us to consult than Paul? We've got Peter Adams coming to help us. We've got our mission team coming to help us. We have people within our congregation who are experienced with mission. But I think you'd agree that Paul has a bit more experience probably than all of them put together. So I think it's a good place to start with some of Paul's letters. So my ABC, my A comes from our first reading, and it's for our approach to the people that we're going to be meeting during the mission week. Our attitude towards them. Now, speaking last week, Ian was talking about relationships. And he said that people who know it all can be a little bit irritating. And one or two nods and smiles around the room tells me that he was absolutely right. And Paul agrees with Ian on that. And so in verse 2, and not of the message version that was read to us this morning, but if you look at it in the NIV, Paul says, I resolved to know nothing when I came to you. I resolved to know nothing except Christ crucified. He doesn't claim to know it all. He claims to know the main thing about what he's going to be talking about. He comes in humility and in weakness as well. He comes not in his own strength, but in the strength of God. I'm sure you all know some people of whom you might say, oh, he could sell sand to Arabs. And if your business is pure sales, that may be a very good thing, because you've got an excellent salesman. But if you're an Arab, you probably don't want a salesman coming to you who could sell sand to Arabs. Because he's going to be trying to sell you something that you really don't want. And that's something that we need to be aware of in this mission as well. We know the value of what we are bringing. But there are people out there who don't, and people out there who don't want to know. And if we engage in a hard sell, then potentially we do ourselves a lot of damage. There are a huge number of people out there who are strongly against the church because of the hard sell, because they've had a bad experience. And we need to be aware of that. We need to be sensitive to it. We still need to talk to people about it. We still need to do our bit, because that is what we are called on by God to do. But Paul, in the NIV version, he says he comes with speech, not with preaching. So the speech that he comes with, it's his own personal side of it. It's not preaching. Preaching is a hard sell. But Paul comes with speech. It's a personal approach, not a purely biblical one. He comes as a witness, not as a philosopher, not as a salesman. He comes and he says, look, this is what I know. And as Ian said the other day, come and see. We're leading. We're not trying to push. And a lot of us have enjoyed the testimony training that Ruth Ridge gave. Testimony is so powerful. So powerful. I've talked before about scars. We have scars, physical scars on our body. And they point to things that we know, that we have experienced, but which we have recovered from. And if we can show people that in our lives, it's incontrovertible evidence. And Paul, as I say, he says, I resolve to know Jesus, what he did, who he was, and that's it. That's all. And that's what we need to stick to as well. We need to stick to what is God-given. It can be tempting if somebody doesn't accept what you're saying to try and be more persuasive. Maybe to twist things a little bit to try and fit the mould that we perceive they're looking for it to fit. But if we start to do that, if we start to change the message, then what grows in the wake of what we say to people will not be of God. It will be of us. If we start to put us into the recipe. So we need to stick to what is God-given. In verse 6 of the NIV version, Paul talks about a message of wisdom among the mature. We could understand that to be that he's speaking to people who are already Christian. But that's not what he means. What he's talking about there is receiving, or people who are receptive to the message. The idea is that if you give something to a baby, the first thing it will do is stick it in its mouth. It may be food, it may be a plant, it may be a stone. First thing a baby does, stick it in its mouth. And there are, in that respect, babies out there. There are people who will try anything. But if they're mature, then they won't put things in their mouth unless they're good for them. And so it's the mature people who will receive the word. And we're told elsewhere in the gospel that not everybody will accept it. In Matthew chapter 10, Jesus says, if anyone will not welcome you or listen to your words, leave that home or town and shake the dust from your feet. And we shouldn't regard that as failure, though, either, because it is said that there are 7 steps to somebody's conversion. What we don't know as we go to talk to them is which step they're on, or which step we represent. I remember when I did an Alpha course, it all made a lot of sense, but at the end of the course, I was not a Christian. Now, the people who were leading that Alpha course may have thought, okay, that's a cross in the box for Christopher. You know, I have failed. And I thought I have failed the course. But the people leading the course may have thought that they had failed. But they hadn't. Because a week later, I'm a bit slow, you know, a week later, everything fell into place. So they hadn't failed. They had put essential stuff in place, without which I would never have got to the place that I eventually arrived at. So don't be disheartened if somebody says, oh, that's all very interesting, thank you, and then shuts the door. Because you don't know. You may have put the one piece in place that they needed, and they've just got to work it out. Our failure is not God's failure. God's word will achieve what it sets out to do. So that's my A, our approach, our attitude. And my B is our second reading today, Matthew 5. I'm sure you've all heard a lot of sermons about salt and light. And I have to say, when I saw that this was a reading for today, I thought, what on earth am I going to say that they haven't already heard in one or more different forms? We know that salt adds flavour. We know that salt preserves. A lot of the salt that they used in Jesus' time came from the Dead Sea. They would have used evaporation. You flood a little area and then you let the sun evaporate the water and you're left with salt crystals. Now, if you're lucky enough to get the layer of salt that was probably not on top, because if the salt was on top, you never know what might have dropped on it from above. So we'll let them scrape that off. Then you get the middle layer of salt, which is going to be pure. And then as you get down to the bottom of the salt pan, there's always the danger of getting a bit of grit or whatever from the bottom of it. So there are different grades of salt. You've got cooking salt at one end, or the, you know, nice bit of Maldon salt that you sprinkle on your roast. And at the other end of the scale, you've got the sort of salt that they spread on roads in winter. Got a lot of grit and impurities in it. We need to make sure that our salt is the salt that we want to put on our food, not the stuff that goes on the roads. And it's the salt is good character. It's not just good deeds. It is good character. Because if we don't act, or if our character is not the same as our deeds, there's an inconsistency there, and we start to look insincere. And again, that is one of the objections, one of the big objections that I see people raising about the church. Now, you're all there holy and what have you on Sunday, but come Monday, you know, it's a different picture. I don't know if any of you go to the pub. Good, clean, living people, probably not. But when we were in the Red Lion singing carols just before Christmas, it occurred to me that I got my pint of beer and I got my packet of crisps. It's sort of the two things go together. Why did they sell so many crisps? Why did they have them on display so prominently? It's because the salt makes you thirsty. So you have a pint of crisps and a pint of crisps. You have a packet of crisps and a pint of beer.
That would make you thirsty.
It would. But the thing is, if you have a pint of crisps and a packet of beer, you'll have to have another packet of beer shortly, won't you? You know what I'm saying. The salt makes you thirsty, so you buy more beer. And we have to ask ourselves, does the salt in our life make people thirsty? And thinking about the light, what sort of a light are we? Are you a little head torch, which will allow you to read a book or a map? Are you a torch with a couple of AA batteries in it, which will maybe shed a pool of light about 6 feet around you, so you can see where your next step is? Are you a bedside light? Are you one of the lights that we've got in here, which sheds light to everybody in this room? Or are you a street light? Do you shed light in your street? Sorry? Well, if you go out at midnight, there'll be all sorts of people out there who need your help. Verse 14 of our second reading. We are called to be the light of the world. There's no point in being the light of the church. There's no point, really, in being the light of our own houses. That light needs to get out. It needs to shine through Mark's Tay. It needs to shine through our communities, through our workplaces. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. We need to be that obvious, not just our physical presence, but our faith as well needs to be that obvious. It needs to permeate everything we do. If you add salt to a dish, you don't end up with one salty mouthful and the rest of it feeling, tasting all bland. The salt goes through everything, every aspect of it. And that's what we need to do. It was a question which I asked the youth group a couple of months ago. If you were put on trial and the charge against you was that you were a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict you? We're not... No, the jury isn't going to be formed of people purely from this church. There'll be 12 men or women from right across every spectrum, the whole spectrum of your life. Would there be enough evidence to convict you? And that brings me to my C. My C is for conduct. So we have our attitude or approach, our behaviour and our conduct. And our conduct comes, as I say, from the last reading. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. Does the darkness that surrounds each one of us understand the light in our lives? Does the darkness around us understand the light in our lives? Because that is what we need if we are going to spread the word, if our mission is going to be a success, if we are going to grow the church we love. Amen.
Nice thing.